coming to you from the top of the SmartWorks Tower. Nestled between the massage parlor and donut shop in beautiful downtown Red Bluff, it's the PenPals.Buzz podcast. Need a genuine connection? This is the place to learn how a pen pal can change your life. And, oh yeah, they just happen to be in prison. But Big Steve will never judge. He's open-minded, he's a little quirky, and he's ready for another adventure. So get your postage stamps, grab a pen and paper, and get comfy for 30 minutes of pen pal pleasure. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
Yeah, it's about time we're back here. Is that what you were thinking?
I know it is. I know you were thinking that, and I'm sorry. I've been promising to be here every Monday with a new episode, and it wasn't possible, but I've gotten my notebook right here. You hear that? And my pen right here. I'm going to click the pen to my teeth so you know it's really a pen. Here, listen to this. Ow. And I'm writing down, must do podcast every Monday or else my wife, Anya, will kick me as hard as she can in the I told her, I said, Anya, you need, if I don't do this, kick me as hard as you can. And she's like, no, Steven, I would never do that. But I'm hoping she really does it. Problem is, she's the type of girl that would make sure she gets a video of it for TikTok and YouTube. And I don't want to go viral in that way. It's just not my thing. I'm sorry. If you want to be a guest on our show, you have comments, feedback, good or bad, it doesn't matter as long as it's not bad. It's 888-2-PENPAL. That's our number. You can also email us at help@penpals.buzz. This episode brought to you by AMPM, Too Much Good Stuff. And when I find sponsors for the show, I always find companies that I believe in. And I tell you, this AMPM, I'm drinking a Diet Dr. Pepper in a large cup right now from AMPM. And 89 cents, this thing's probably, what, 44 ounces? I don't know. It's huge. 89 cents. Greatest deal ever. You can get cookies for like a dollar, you know. And in this environment where a lot of us don't have the money to go spend $14 or so now on a 6-inch Subway sandwich, and you don't want to spend $9.99 on a 12-pack of soda, there's nothing better than an 89-cent drink that's going to last me for the entire, at least for the entire show here. Let me have a drink right now. AMPM, you can find them in 17,823,944 locations somewhere near you. I'm sure of it. I didn't fact check that, so don't quote me on it, all right? But they're good. And you remember that old, back in the 80s, I remember growing up, and this is what I always heard about AMPM. I'm a boss at AMPM anymore. You know, and for some of us, that's the only time in our life we can be the boss, especially us married guys, if you know what I mean. You're not the boss all day. You're not the boss at night. But when you're on your way to work, you can buy whatever the heck you want, and no one's there to censor you. An interesting topic on the podcast today. We're going to be talking about high-profile inmates. And I'm reminded of something my therapist told me just the other day when I was in my bi-weekly session, which is twice a month, not twice a week. I don't want you to think I need 8 sessions. I only need 2 every month. But he said something that was interesting, and I'm going to share it with you. He said, I'm lucky that it's not my job to decide who gets to be treated like a human being. And at first, I just thought, oh, that's kind of weird. I didn't think, but I was driving home. I started thinking more and more about it. I'll say it again here. I'm lucky that it's not my job to decide who gets to be treated like a human being. So many people like to be the ones that think they can decide who gets treated with humanity and decency and who doesn't. And they make that value judgment that, okay, I don't like what this guy did, so therefore he doesn't deserve to be treated with any kind of dignity. He doesn't deserve to be treated like a human being. Then they might see another instance of someone that it makes more sense, and they say, okay, this makes more sense. He doesn't seem so bad. So this guy we can actually treat like a human because he had circumstances that make more sense to me. But that other guy, no, he shouldn't be treated like a human. That quote ties in so nicely to what we're doing here because people get on penpals.buzz and they start searching, okay, let's see who I want to write. Do I want to write him? Do I want to write her? The first thing you can do is a search, and you can weed out anyone that's there for a violent crime, for instance. You can find people that are Christian. You can find men. You can find women. You can find somebody over 50. If you think maybe the younger guys are going to be more problematic, maybe an older guy will be more mellow, easier to get along with. And most people don't want to write these high-profile inmates that have been all over the media, that oftentimes have severe, severe crimes, maybe the death penalty, maybe life without parole. And so instead, most people end up writing people that are in prison for smaller-scale crimes, drugs, burglary. These are guys that are in for 3 or 4 years, and then they're getting out. What I hope everybody can think about today is, would it make more sense to have a pen pal who is a high-profile inmate or not? And everybody has their own. There's no right or wrong answer. So let's look at some of the reasons. If you're here and you're looking for a relationship, if you're looking for somebody you can date, if you're looking for somebody you can take care of for a few years until they get out and then hopefully be with them, then probably a high-profile inmate isn't what you're looking for. That's probably not good for you. However, if you want a pen pal for some very intellectually stimulating conversation, if you want to see some fascinating letters from someone that has really lived an interesting life and has a ton of stories to tell, if you want someone that might challenge your beliefs and your stereotypes and make you think, maybe make you think differently about things in life that you've never even considered, then a high-profile inmate can be really, really good. And I feel like you can be more open with someone that in your mind is really, really bad, that's done really bad things, because nothing you tell them is going to shock them, for one. You don't have to feel ashamed of anything you've done. If you cheated on your spouse, if you hit your kid, whatever it might be, you don't have to feel ashamed. And you can be open and honest with this person, and they'll listen and they might understand. And how many times can we not tell our spouse or our loved ones things that have happened in our life because of shame or fear, or we have a problem being vulnerable with them? This gives you a reason to do that. Now, when you look at, and I mentioned this in past episodes, but just briefly, when you're looking at true crime on TV, one of the hottest genres out there right now, if you look on Prime or Netflix or Max or Hulu or Paramount Plus, or I can't name all of them, but you know what I'm saying, and you look in the top 10 list, you're going to see true crime. You're going to see serial killers. You're going to see cults. And what you don't see are people that are there for having a few ounces of drugs or stealing a stereo at Walmart. You don't see those on TV. And the reason, wouldn't that be a boring show? Imagine Keith Morrison on Dateline. And imagine he says, "Welcome to this edition of Dateline. Today we're going to talk about a man that was drinking and driving and went to prison for 1 year. I'm Keith Morrison. Today we're going to be talking about a man who stole some food at Walmart and went to jail for 40 days. Is that really what you want to watch? Is that interesting to you? Isn't it a lot more interesting to see some of these high-profile cases? Gabby Petito, for instance, or this guy in Idaho that murdered everyone in that house. Isn't that more interesting? Because you want to know the backstory. You don't want to just know that, okay, they went to Walmart and they stole some food, and then they got arrested in the parking lot. No, you want to know the backstory. What were they thinking? What was going on in their life? Were they in a bad relationship? Did they have a bad childhood? Did something happen at work that caused them to snap? You want to know the backstory, the details. You want to know what's going on in that brain of theirs that made them do the things they did. That's what really interests us, which is why we like watching cults and serial killers. We want to know, what were they thinking? How could they do this? What better way to find out what they were thinking than to just write them directly and ask them? So it's not my job either to decide who gets to be treated like a human being and who doesn't, but it is my job to share things that I find interesting and to share my opinions. And I'm going to go ahead and go on the record now and give my opinion that both of the individuals I'm discussing with you today are worthy of being a pen pal with, are worthy of dignity and being treated like a human. And I may be wrong. You might not agree with me. You probably won't. I bet you'll agree with me on one of them, maybe not the other. But I'm going to tell you a story about two separate people and two separate crimes. One's a man in Arizona who, and this is true, you won't believe this, he's serving 16 and a half years. Why? He sold 1 ounce of marijuana to an undercover officer. Yeah, 1 ounce For our European friends that might not know what an ounce is, let's just say it's not much. Here in the USA, it's what you can put into an envelope for one postage stamp, which is usually about 4 sheets of paper. I mean, just a tiny amount, a couple tablespoons. 16 years for that. How could you not want to write to this man? How could you not? The other guy I'm going to be talking about is a guy named Jason Myers, which is M-I-E-A-R-S, and he's in Texas. He got nicknamed the Yuma Killer. Back in 2009, he went on a crime spree, including the shooting death of a tow truck driver, and he robbed a bank, and he robbed some other people, and it was all bad. It was all bad. But it's very clear to everybody and came out at trial that Jason's severely mentally ill. Severely mentally ill. And what people don't realize is that a large number of inmates are mentally ill that end up in prisons. And I don't think they should be there. And you might disagree with me. And I get that if you're the victim of a crime and a mentally ill person kills your family member, I understand that. You're not going to think, oh, well, they're just mentally ill. They shouldn't be punished. I get that. I'm sure I wouldn't think that either if someone killed someone that I loved. As my therapist also said that day, and it's funny, he said, if we were sitting here in the room and a lion broke in the door as we're sitting there in the therapy session, what's the first thing? Are we going to think, oh, I wonder what that lion's childhood was like? Or are we going to get the hell out of that room however we can, right? So when something is close and near to you, it's a lot less likely you're going to be too concerned about whether he was abused as a child or not. So I can tell you, I spoke to both of these individuals and I've emailed them back and forth. I talked to one of their grandmothers. I talked to the other one's mom and sister, both. And all of them, the inmates and the family members, treated me kindly, with respect, decency, treated me like a human. They weren't yelling at me. So in my mind, that's what they deserve back from me. Now, when we're getting mad at someone that's mentally ill for some of the things they've done, and when we say, I'm not going to write this mentally ill person, to me, it's like getting mad at a puppy that pees on the carpet, or getting mad at a 6-month-old for crying too much. All right, so before we get mad or make any judgments or jump to any conclusions, what I'd like to do is read a couple of news articles about each of these individuals. And I'm going to start with the guy that sold 1 ounce of marijuana. His name's Trent Budita, and he's in Arizona. And he's one of our penpals.buzz members. I'm going to go ahead and start off by giving you his address if you'd like to write him. And then I'm going to read the story, and I'm going to give you the address back at the end of everything here. All right, so it's Trent, T-R-E-N-T. His last name's Budita, which is B-O-U-H-D-I-D-A. And then after his name, you write number 255920. Next line is ASPC Tucson, which is T-U-C-S-O-N. I always mix that up. Santa Rita Unit, P.O. Box 24401, Tucson, Arizona, 85734. That's Trent Budita. And we're going to jump right into this. This is an article from the Phoenix New Times by quite an esteemed journalist. Her name is Katya Schwink. And the headline is How a South Phoenix Kid Got 16 Years in the Slammer for 1 ounce of Weed. There was no reason Trent Budita had to go to prison. Certainly not for a 16-year stretch. But flukes and bad luck can do that. It was May 14th, 2015. Budita was 21 years old, with another unbearable Arizona summer fast approaching. He found himself in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven across from his East Phoenix apartment. He was in need of a soft drink. There was a man that day, hovering by the shop entrance, making conversation with passersby. He looked a bit run down, hawking his sales pitch, undeterred by the convenience store patrons who ignored him and continued on their way. He was handing out business cards from a pawn shop, his newest venture. Budita stopped for a moment to speak with him. The man asked the South Mountain Community College student if he had anything he wanted to sell, and Budita did. The man introduced himself as Kev, but his real name, which Budita would not learn until later, was Ronald Elcock. He had been working as an undercover Tempe Police Department detective for 7 years. Over the next 2 months, at Elcock's requests, Boudita sold the cop a total of 1 ounce of marijuana. And for that, Boudita would find himself locked up in a state prison for more than a decade. Arizona is known for having one of the most punitive sentencing regimes in the country for drug charges. For years, even simple possession of cannabis could mean a prison sentence. But since Arizona voters legalized recreational marijuana use in 2020, Maricopa County's traditionally harsh enforcement of pot offenses has eased considerably. Now in Arizona, the cannabis industry is booming. Investors have set their sights on Arizona cannabis, eager to reap the profits from the green rush. Boudita now has watched all this unfold from a prison cell in the desert, out in the southern outskirts of Tucson. Phoenix New Times reviewed hundreds of pages of records in his case to examine how Boudita, a young black man from South Phoenix, found himself trapped in the criminal justice system for an ounce of weed. For those convicted of minor cannabis sales, there are a few ways out, even now. Boudita has an initial clemency hearing on August 9th, but Governor Doug Ducey, who would need to sign off on any commutation, is notoriously unmerciful when it comes to clemency cases. Proposition 207, which largely legalized cannabis in the state, brushed over such offenses, leaving Boudita and others like him in a kind of legal purgatory when it comes to relief. Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell declined an interview request. However, MCAO spokeswoman Jennifer Luer said, "It's important to note that the defendant had prior convictions when he was found guilty of selling marijuana, and sentencing guidelines set by the legislature determined his sentence." The two men standing outside 7-Eleven that day in 2015 might have looked from a distance like friends. Both were black. They were dressed casually. I probably had some long shorts, basketball shoes on, large t-shirt with some prints on the front, Elcock, the Tempe sergeant, later recounted at trial. I dressed to match the clientele that I would be dealing with on the street. Boudita was put at ease by Elcock's demeanor, and he was intrigued by the pawn shop pitch. He stopped to chat with Elcock, offering to sell him his old Samsung Galaxy phone and a pair of wireless headphones. "I'm a firm believer in people starting their own businesses and doing something positive for themselves," Boudita explained in a recent phone interview, "especially if it's someone who looks like me, who grew up similar to me." Trent Boudita grew up in South Phoenix near 40th Street and Baseline Road. He and his older brother were raised by a single mother. It was not always an idyllic childhood. Any semblance of that was cut short when, at age 15, Boudita found himself caught up, for the first time, in the justice system. In a meaningful sense, Trent Boudita's story begins then, in 2009. That spring, Phoenix police were investigating a string of armed robberies in South Phoenix. They identified a group of teenagers as suspects. One was Boudita. To prosecute the case, the county brought in April Sponsel, then a deputy county attorney and an up-and-coming gang prosecutor, in her second year working on such cases. More than a decade later, Sponsel would become the center of a major scandal at the county attorney's office. In the fall of 2020, she worked with Phoenix Police Department to bring gang charges against Black Lives Matter protesters, basing the case on the demonstrators' use of the political slogan ACAB, "All Cops Are Bastards." That and the alleged misconduct in earlier cases later cost Sponsel her job. But back in 2009, no one was scrutinizing her prosecutions of young black teens in South Phoenix. By all accounts that later emerged in court, Boudita did not carry out the robberies. He was never identified in a lineup. He was sitting in the backseat of a getaway car registered to one of the other teens, as he had done on a few occasions. He claims he didn't know what they were doing the first two times until they returned to the car with stolen property, a probation officer wrote in the 2010 sentencing report. He denies receiving any financial gain from the offenses. It was enough, though, for Sponsel to bring multiple armed robbery and criminal gang charges against Boudita, taking the extra step to charge him as an adult. Scared of the sentence he would face if he took the case to trial, Boudita pleaded guilty to 2 counts of armed robbery and 1 count of assisting a criminal street gang, and found himself at just 16 years old facing a 5-year prison sentence. Prior to Boudita's sentencing hearing, a probation officer recommended that the kid receive a short sentence and probation instead of the 5-year plea he had signed. The defendant is only 16 years old, and it appears his role in the offenses is relatively minor, the officer wrote, saying that a prison sentence would only make it more likely that he would reoffend later. But Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Stephen Lynch was not moved. He gave Boudita the full Monty. He was a little baby when he went in there, Boudita's aunt, Erica Stewart, told New Times from her home in Indiana. At the time, the case had felt familiar to her, she said. Boudita had fallen into the wrong crowd and into a hostile court system. They throw him in a cage like animals, and there you go. That's your punishment, Stewart said. I think it was because it's Arizona and it's prejudice there. It really is. On the day Boudita met Elcock, he was still savoring his freedom after spending the better part of his teenage years being incarcerated. He was, at that time, trying to turn his life around. I made some very poor choices when it came to my associations, Boudita said, reflecting on his old case. At the time, he'd been having difficulties with his family and chose to seek a sense of belonging wherever he felt accepted. Despite warnings from his mother to stay away from some of those other guys, he was drawn to them because they were older and invited him into their crowd. Back in 2015, Boudita was living under the close watch of his probation officer, and until he met Elcock, the 21-year-old was ticking all the right boxes. He worked full-time, balanced two jobs by the time of his arrest. One was a sports videography startup, and another was at a customer service company in Tempe. He attended his parole appointments dutifully. His probation officer seems to talk as highly of him as possible. When he was arrested, he had just 5 classes left to complete his college degree. Around the time that Boudita met Elcock, his girlfriend learned that she was pregnant. The two had lived together for the previous 5 months in an apartment in East Phoenix, and sometimes, in the afternoon, Boudita would stop at the 7-Eleven across the street. The Tempe Police Department's plan behind the local pawn shop sting was simple. A team of undercover officers would open a brick-and-mortar storefront. Some cops would work behind the counter. Another 3 would operate as scouts for the shop, going out on the street and prospecting potential clientele. The idea was to get out there, Elcock explained at the trial, and eventually they'll start trafficking stolen items to you. Outside the 7-Eleven, Elcock was passing out his business card, asking people to call the shop. He and Boudita chatted for a bit, then exchanged numbers. That day, Boudita texted the top photos of a few things he had lying around, just old stuff I had in my apartment that I didn't need anymore, Boudita recalled. I'm like legitimately trying to help this dude out, he said. At one point, Elcock mentioned that he was looking for heaters, a dated slang term for pistols. I'm thinking he's talking about an actual heater you heat the house with or something, Boudita said. And I had one of those and I sent him a picture of it. Elcock declined to buy that. He did, though, buy an old phone off Boudita for $60. Elcock texts that he wants a 1/4 ounce. If it's fire, Elcock tells Boudita in a text, the dudes from the shop on the card will pick up some more. This could be a come-up for you. Hustle. That was how Cuevas began her opening statement in Boudita's trial on November 20th, 2017, with that single word, letting it reverberate with the jury. At the time, Cuevas was a deputy county attorney. She had worked on serious cases, obtaining, in one instance, a 24-year prison sentence for a Phoenix pornographer who was convicted of running a brothel. Now, Boudita's case was in her hands. A hustle, Cuevas continued, can mean different things to people. Sometimes we use the word we're watching a football game. In this case, though, it's about a different type of hustle. The defendant, Trent Boudita, his hustle was selling drugs. It was almost Thanksgiving 2017. Boudita's son was nearly 2 years old. He was born just a month before his father was arrested on 4 counts of selling marijuana. Boudita has spent the previous year and a half fighting the case, being ping-ponged, as he put it, between different attorneys, a pro bono lawyer, a private law firm, a public defender. By the time of his trial, Boudita's attorney was court-appointed. It was a man named Roderick Carter, a local criminal defense attorney in Phoenix. I just had so much going through my mind at the time, Boudita said. His grandmother had just died. His relationship with his girlfriend was strained by the court case. It was already wild that I was facing that much time for this charge, he said. It makes it that much more difficult. At trial, Boudita faced a catch-22. The only real defense left to him was entrapment. The defense argued that it had been Elcock, not Boudita, who had conceived of the crime and induced him to commit it. But such a defense would rest on Budita's testimony, and Budita was wary of testifying because if he did, his prior charge would be revealed to the jury. He chose not to take the stand. The trial lasted a little more than a week. The verdict came down on Monday after Thanksgiving. An inevitable parade of 12 jurors read off a guilty verdict on each count. It was, Budita said, like watching my fate through a glass. The 16 years and 3 months that Budita received was not, in fact, the worst sentence allowed by Arizona law. As a court commissioner explained to him at one of the hearings, technically Budita could have received a 100-year sentence for the crime. Instead, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Richard Nothwer gave Budita 11 years and 3 months for the sales, which ran concurrently, plus an additional 5 years because he was on probation at the time. It was more or less what the judge was directed to do by Arizona's sentencing laws, given that Budita, because he had 3 serious felonies on his record from the 2009 case, was in the highest category of reoffenders. Summer in prison is bleak in Arizona. At the state prison in Tucson, the swamp coolers have been faulty lately, and for a time in June, the heat was unbearable. Budita spent some days trying to get it fixed. "Part of me wants to point out every dysfunction and inhumanity that this place has, and I used to," he wrote to the New Times, "but I've learned to pick my battles." Lately, in fact, Budita has been feeling optimistic. In June, he celebrated his 29th birthday. Some of his friends in prison made him enchiladas to celebrate. He works now as a GED tutor, teaching classes to men in prison who are studying for the degree. Some of these students passed the test recently, and despite his nerves around public speaking, Budita gave a short speech at the celebration. "I encourage them to continue seeking knowledge," he said, "and reminded them that their past does not have to define who they are and who they are working to become." "When Budita gets out of prison," he said, "he wants to go to the ocean. He's never seen it. He wants to reunite with his family and his son, who's now nearing 7 years old." "It affects everybody," Budita's aunt said of the impact of the case in their family. Budita's older brother was still very hurt, she said. Now Budita's young son, like Trent Budita himself, is growing up without a father. "The extra stress, financial strain, and confusion tore my family apart," Budita said. Unbelievable article, unbelievable story. One of our penpals.buzz members, Trent Budita. Let me read his profile that's on our website right now. It's a lot shorter. "My name is Trent. I'm currently a little more than halfway through a 16-year sentence for selling an ounce of weed to an undercover cop. I know you're probably thinking, wow, that's wild, or there must be more to it. Either way, you're right. But just like there's more to my crime, there's more to me. You can contact me via the Securus app or securustech.net. Go to the Add an Inmate, then search for Trent Budita in the state of Arizona. The facility is listed as AZ Doc Inmate Services. If you prefer to handwrite a letter, you can reach me at this address: Trent Budita, number 255920, ASPC Tucson, Santa Rita Unit, P.O. Box 24401, Tucson, Arizona, 85734. I think he'd be a great pen pal to have, and I'd encourage all of you to write him. I'm going to read now another article that was published, and this is about another of our penpals.buzz customers, a guy named Jason Myers. His address is Jason Myers, number 172-9946, Robertson Unit, P.O. Box 660-400, Dallas, Texas, 75266. And this case probably won't give you the same feeling as the last one I read, but I still feel deep in my heart that this man is deserving of having someone to write him and to be his friend. But I know a lot of people will disagree, and I understand. A mentally troubled University of Texas at San Antonio graduate student who went on a crime spree in 2009 that included the shooting death of a tow truck driver and a bank heist was sentenced Friday to 50 years in prison, 5-0. Jason Christopher Myers had a long history of mental issues that might have been exacerbated by the fact that his mother, a psychiatrist, was the one who treated him. Myers, who apparently had an obsession with violent films, which charged in March 2009 in the death of Jose Fernandez, 29, a tow truck driver, who was patrolling the parking lot outside the Outpost, a University of Texas San Antonio Boulevard apartment complex where the defendant lived. After the slaying, Myers made an anonymous 911 call claiming to be Ben Wade, a villain in the Western film 310 to Yuma. That wasn't the only movie he seemed to be fixated on, Sellers testified. He claimed to have watched Man on Fire, a violent thriller in which the protagonist racks up a large body count in excess of 500 times. The week Fernandez was killed, Myers robbed his neighbors and IBC Bank and shot at another neighbor. Sellers described Myers as an intelligent man who obtained his undergraduate degree in 3 years, was accepted into law school, and was deemed most likely to succeed in his high school yearbook. But he also has childlike qualities, including magical thinking, flipping tarot cards or coins over and over until he felt he got an answer. Myers is also known for the hundreds of appeals and writs he's filed with the court. That's a manifestation of mental illness, doing things over and over and over again, even when it's self-destructive, Sellers said. Eunice Fernandez said her brother was quite different from the man who killed him. He was very shy, loving, caring, and even had a Disney movie collection, she said. He had a very big heart, and I really miss him. My whole family misses him. I feel like we finally got closure. This guy is mentally ill. Nobody can condone or like any of the things he did. But does he deserve kindness? Does he deserve to be treated with decency like a human being? Or is he a monster, as people think? People hear about these killers and they say, they're monsters, they're not human. Fact is, he's mentally ill. He's got an illness just like you might have if you had a liver failure, kidney cancer, heart problems. The difference is mental illness makes you do things that people don't understand, things that society hates, things that people see as despicable and horrible. But a lot of times it really is out of that person's control. A lot of times it's the brain that decides what the person does or doesn't do. And that's why we have mental hospitals, which I believe is where people like this should be, and maybe for the rest of their life. But putting them into prison with the general population doesn't seem to really help anything. I don't think it's the right place for them. And I'm hoping somebody out there can overlook all that bad stuff and maybe be his friend, maybe just write him and say hi. You know, hope you're having a good day. Sorry how your life turned out. It could be he's where he needs to be, but this is clearly a smart guy, voted most likely to succeed in high school, college graduate student. He's not a stupid person, right? Just had something go really, really wrong in the wiring in the brain. I'm going to read his profile for you, and then we're going to wrap up. Hi, my name is Jason. Currently, I'm housed in segregation. Currently looking for a good pen pal and friend to write. Segregation gets lonely, and I'm looking to write someone to help the time pass more easily. My hobbies are the paranormal and metaphysics. I read a lot regarding UFOs and extraterrestrials. My favorite podcast radio show is Coast to Coast AM. Anyone interested in writing me can send an email via securistech.net or the Securis app, and I'll email you back. Just search for Jason Myers, M-I-E-A-R-S, in the state of Texas. The facility is listed as the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Thanks, and I hope to hear from you soon. His mailing address, Jason Myers, number 172-9946, Robertson Unit, P.O. Box 660-400, Dallas, Texas, 75266. That's Jason Myers, penpals.buzz member, also known as the Yuma Killer. I hope everybody enjoys their Memorial Day holiday. Remember, this is a day to honor the sacrifice and the loss of members of the military who died in service. It's a way to say thank you for your service, for sticking up for this country, for fighting for the things that are right. I think we can all appreciate that, whatever our views may be on different issues. I'm Big Steve. Thank you for being here. It got a little dark, a little deep, and I hope it gave you some things to think about. I will be back next Monday, and if not, You know what's going to happen, and I'm not looking forward to that. See you then.
It's lockdown time for Big Steve. But he'll be back Monday with another edition of the PenPals.Buzz podcast. To be a guest on our show, email podcast@penpals.buzz or call 888-2-PENPAL. PenPals.Buzz is a division of Snaptura Inmate Services.